What's going on, gamers? Welcome back to The Graveyard. I'm The Graveyard Gamer, and thank you for joining me for this episode of Graveyard Gaming. Now, in today's episode, I want to talk about some of the books that I have read and how I think they could make for some awesome video games. Then, I want to talk about some of the books that I'm reading right now that I actually sit there and go, wow, these are based on video games, and I think if you like video games and you like reading, you should check these books out. And then I want to talk about The Graveyard Shift because, you know what, I actually thought I didn't have a lot to talk about, but the more I kind of broke down what I had done in the games that I played, I realized, holy smokes, I got some good stuff to talk about. So with that being said, let's jump in and let's talk about some of those books that I have read that I think would make for some awesome video games. So gamers, one of the hobbies that I have outside of gaming is actually reading. And though I brag and I'm very proud of the fact that I don't have a backlog in gaming anymore, I cannot say that about reading. I have a huge backlog of books to go through. But when I'm reading, one of the things that I do is I can't help but kind of picture what kind of game would this be like, right? As gaming being my number one passion, my number one hobby, I can't help but kind of break everything down into would this work as a game. So what I've done is I've taken a list of books and I've kind of broken down different genres of gaming I think they could fit into and I think they could be successful. So with that being said, let's start off with Stephen King's The Stand. Look, if you don't know what that book is, it's set in a world where Captain Trips, a super flu that was invented by the government, gets leaked and it kills 99% of the world population. On top of that, you have several groups of people. Some find themselves being drawn to Randall Flagg, the walking dude who's got a ton of charisma, but is kind of this world's antichrist, if you will. Also, if you've read any Stephen King, the name Randall Flagg should ring a bell. Like, he's an antagonist in a lot of Stephen King's works. Stephen King's connected a lot of his books, see, through different little hints and teases and whatnot, and that also happens to be with the good guys, as some group are brought to Mother Abigail, because she can talk to him with The Shine. Oh, there's that little connection, because that reminds you of The Shining, right? Well, anyway, she believes that, hey, God has sent them all here for a reason, and they have to be prepared to take down Randall Flagg. And eventually, that's where the book goes to a confrontation between these two groups. I don't want to cover that. Like, that's there. Now, Randall Flagg will be a part of my game. My game kind of runs parallel to that. See, I want to cover you as the leader of this settlement. You're going to build up not only the amount of people that's with you, but I want you to build up a settlement. Now, my gameplay is an open world RPG action game. I want it to actually mimic a lot of, or be very similar in style, I should say, Fallout 4. I think that is exactly kind of the world you would go with this. Not post-apocalyptic in the sense of like buildings being destroyed and whatnot, but in the sense of, hey, you've got to kind of start over. You're the leader. You're going to send people out to go accomplish missions, and sometimes you need to accomplish those missions yourself. On top of that, you're dealing with bandits and raiders, because the one thing we know is when civilization falls, you see the worst of humanity. On top of that, right, it's going to get more, is while you're dealing with bandits and raiders, and I do think it's important, like, you work your way through the bandits to try to get to their leader. You work your way through the raiders to get to their leader, right? And there could be multiple different groups of those, and that's what kind of keeps you busy throughout the game. However, Randall Flagg is going to be sending spies into your camp, and that's where a new twist to this game comes in, and that is a trust meter. Who do you trust? As you're walking around, are you hearing people saying things that make you go, whoa, why would you say that? Are people coming up and talking to you as the leader, asking questions that seem to be stepping over a line? Like, why do you need to know that information? Better yet, are they coming to you with mission requests that's either seemingly going to get a lot of your people killed for very little gain, or even getting you killed for very little gain? Or when you do these missions, do you realize, okay, look, there's not a lot here, but what I got is actually super important, so yeah, it was worth the risk. After each mission that you complete yourselves, or you send a team on, you get the report, you then have to decide, was that person looking out for the best interest of this settlement, or were they trying to get you? Was Randall Flagg sending that person there to weaken your settlement? I think that would add this little layer of distrust slash trust in your community that would be amazing. Now, again, I do want it to run parallel. In the book, there is an ending to Randall Flagg's settlement, and what I think would be interesting is about halfway through the game, I would like you to kind of see the fallout. Like, I think it'd be kind of cool if you're building up to take on Randall Flagg, only to go to Vegas where he's at to see the aftermath of what happened in the book. And at that point, now you're kind of free of the shackles of the book and Randall Flagg, but is he truly gone? We know in the book he's not truly gone. Does that impact you? Who takes his place as somebody leading people that are kind of lost? And then as another layer, once that gets settled, I think it'd be kind of cool if all of a sudden Captain Trips mutates a little bit. And now you have people getting sick. And as a leader, you have to figure the best way to take care of them. Do you build another settlement for the sick people? Do you quarantine them? Do you kill them? Like, it's going to be all up to you. That's where that RPG, that role playing comes into it. Can you even find a cure? Maybe that's something you could dangle out there. I don't know. All of these things as I'm playing, I just can see it work out and just be amazing. I mean, yeah, you're the leader of this settlement, so that's going to really play into how you do things. Because as gamers, we're typically like, cool, I'll take these missions on. But the more you're away, the more that's going to go wrong in your settlement. You have to be there to fix that. But also, you need to get out there in the action and see what's going on for yourself. So there's always going to be that conundrum of, do you send a team? Do you go? What if you just want to go exploring? How long can you go exploring before stuff happens? I mean, I kind of think in that situation, if you're just out exploring and stuff and looting and scavenging things that you need, maybe after it's been so long, somebody from camp can track you down and be like, you got to get back here. If you played Red Dead 2, you'll know that that kind of happens if you don't go back to camp for a few days. I think that could be a cool mechanic used here. Now, the next game on my list is Bunnicula. If you've never read Bunnicula, they're just fun kids' books. I still read it, to be honest with you. And ultimately, what it is the book is written by Harold the dog, right? And he's your easygoing dog that would love to just be curled up, chewing on Mr. Monroe's latest shoes or a newspaper, whatever it may be. And one night, the Monroe family comes back, and with them, they have a little surprise. See, they went and seen Dracula, but when they get back, they have a bunny that was left in that theater. That bunny has markings that almost look like a cape. He has long fangs. And the next morning, when everybody wakes up, the vegetables, specifically a carrot, has been drained of all its juice and it's just white. And the Monroes have no idea what happens. You, as a dog, don't know a whole lot, but your good friend Chester the cat, he's a reader and a conspiracy theorist, and he believes it's signs pointing to the new rabbit Bunnicula is actually a vampire. And I'm gonna tell you, it's all done in tongue in cheek. It's just a fun, fun book. I do recommend it, even as adults, read the book. It's so much fun. But I think this could be a cool Telltale game. I think it could also be a game from Supermassive. And I know they make horror, right? But what if it is just that detective style game that kind of you do in their games? You know, you're walking around that point and click, you pick up a piece of evidence and you gotta look it over. Maybe you're picking up a carrot and you're looking at those holes and going, is this something that matches up with Bunnicula? Is there something else in the kitchen that could have caused this? You know, you're checking that out. Maybe you switch between Chester and Harold, and one night as Chester the cat, you're going around looking and you don't see the rabbit in the cage anymore, and you got to figure out how he got out. All these different scenarios. If they wanted to, they could do the first book, Bunnicula, and the second book, Howadayin, kind of combine them together, if you will. Because in Howadayin, the Monroes go on vacation, Harold and Chester get into a boarding house for cats and dogs. And it becomes a murder mystery. And again, I just think a detective style point and click game would be so fun. Maybe some QTEs every once in a while, quick timer events, if you will. There's not really a lot of action in the books. And really, I wouldn't want to see a lot of fighting with a cat and a dog. Like, it just wouldn't line up. But this could be a fun game. This could be a fun game for you yourself. It could be a fun game for kids. It could be a fun game to play with your kids. And everybody kind of figure out what's going on. Like, who killed these people? Is this rabbit actually a vampire? A lot of fun. Again, I have a soft spot in my heart for those books, and I think it would be a ton of fun to kind of explore that in a fun point-and-click detective-style world. Next is Call of Cthulhu, and I know we have had different games that have been inspired by it. The Sinking City, we actually have one title, Call of Cthulhu, but none actually adapt the main story of that short story. I think this could be a lot of fun. In my mind, I see the evil within. I see a horror suspense game. I see the first section of the game being very much like the first section of the book, where your uncle has left you some papers and you're going through and you're reading and you're finding out about this guy that's having all these horrible visions and dreams. And I think it'd be kind of cool if you're put in the place of that guy as he's losing his insanity and you're going through his nightmares and you're having to creep around. That's where that evil within, if you ever played that first game, it's just very like wild and out there and mental. And I definitely see that. Then the next section would see you switch over to a cop, and it'd be in Louisiana in the deep, dark bayous as this cult has gone on. And you're going to go in there and you're going to be trying to not only find some maybe some missing hitchhikers and whatnot, but you're trying to stop this cult, what they're doing, and you're going to just be bombarded. You're in my mind, it would kind of deviate from the story a little bit, and you're going to get lost in there. And it's really about trying to get out of there, trying to take out as many cultists as you can, maybe even trying to arrest them. I think that would be really cool. The more you kill, the more your insanity goes out there, and the more you arrest, the more like calm you are. So it's really like taking them out, but again, it's about getting to this totem, this statue that they're at, but you have to get there. And I mean, they're on there chasing you. Again, I just think there could be so much done here. And then the final section, I think, would be fantastic. The final section of the book has a captain basically getting shipwrecked, and it's just this giant staircase that ultimately is a door leading to Cthulhu himself getting out. And here's the thing. Again, I see a lot of action going on. You're going to be fighting monsters. You're going to be fighting your crew members as they go crazy. You're trying to keep your sanity. The fear is there. But look, the end of that part of the short story is the captain and the first mate on a boat trying to get away. Meanwhile, this giant monster, this Odin god, is chasing them in the water. If that doesn't scream an epic boss fight, I don't know what does. So I definitely think Call of Cthulhu could make for an awesome horror suspense game. Now, I also want to talk about War of the Worlds. Look, H.G. Wells crafted such an amazing story that in the 1930s, it was read over the radio and people actually started believing it. Some people were going crazy. Some people actually killed themselves. That's how mental this was. Like, they really thought Martians was landing on Earth. And if you've seen the Tom Cruise movie, I think that's a great movie. In my mind, I think this could be a action survival game where you got to get resources, you got to collect weapons, kind of set in an open world area. In my mind, I think Days Gone. Think of the setting of Days Gone, right? And you're just trying to survive in there. Martians, giant Martians are everywhere. You're also going to have smaller Martians that kind of get out of the pods that you got to watch out for. You got to craft your weapons. You got to survive. You're going to be running missions for people to help them out and so they can help you out. But the trick to this game is I also think it's kind of roguelike, meaning I think they should last no more than 2 or 3 hours. I do believe, I'm a firm believer, you can save in this game. It doesn't necessarily mean it's got to be super hard or anything, but 2, 3, maybe 4 hours, and that's it. Kind of like the original Dead Rising. If you played that, you know that there was a timer, and after a while, the game's done, right? No matter what you accomplished, what you didn't do, that's how it ends. I think that would be perfect. I think it should be like a game that you're going to play multiple times, because the goal is to survive for that playtime. If it's 4 hours, to make it that 4 hours. Again, limited resources. If you die, up, you restart. If you make it to the ending, maybe you get a little bit more unlocks for the next playthrough. So it constantly keeps getting you, you know, to do better each run through. I think there's just something there. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And honestly, we haven't seen any kind of game with aliens in a while that I can remember, right? So I think this could be a lot of fun. Now, I also think as a 2D platformer game, as a callback to the 90s, in my mind, I see Wolverine Top Secret. And you might go, what is that? Well, in the 90s, we had a lot of X-Men novelizations for kids, and this was one of them. I used to read this book so much. And basically, it's Wolverine one night while the X-Men are playing basketball. Like, no, I can't go out there. I got to think about these memories. Because this is set in the time that Wolverine could not remember anything. And as he shifts through his memories, he's going on different missions. He's seeing different people and different things. I just keep thinking, man, like, how cool would it be to play this out, right? I know Insomniac has a Wolverine game coming out, but what if we were just reliving Wolverine's past missions and just kind of going this route? You're in this 2D side-scroller. I think that would be cool. And then also, in the year 2000, we got a book from Christopher Golden, who wrote a lot of X-Men novels back in the day, but it was called Codename Wolverine. And it's kind of set in one of those present and past stories, where the past is Team X, Wolverine, Sabretooth, Maverick, Mastodon, and Silver Fox, and they're trying to get this item. And I can't remember exactly what they're going for, but they're going to get something. Everything goes wrong on this mission. And then they also have the present day where they're working with Mystique to, again, recover this artifact. They have to. Now, how cool would it be if this is kind of one of those games where you're going to play as Wolverine, but it's not the typical Wolverine stab, stab, stab. Like, this Wolverine is going to use tactics. You know, you're going to always have a teammate with you to go, okay, go for it. Go left. It's going to be like Metal Gear Wolverine, honestly. That's the best way to put it. Except for you're going to have teammates in this. And I think that would be just a fun way to explore this. I would really love this game. Now, finally, what I'm going to say is Assassin's Creed Forsaken. And look, I think this would be perfect for Ubisoft's new mentality of having larger games like the Valhalla Origins and the upcoming Assassin's Creed Red. And then also smaller games like Mirage. This could be the same size and scale of Assassin's Creed Rogue, right? Where, hey man, 20 hours, you can kind of get in there, you can do a ton in this game, maybe 30 hours, you can be 100%. But if you haven't read Forsaken, Forsaken tells the story of Haytham Kinway. That's right, in Assassin's Creed 3, you meet Haytham, you actually play as him in the prologue. He's the father of the main protagonist of Assassin's Creed 3, Connor. Haytham is also the son of Edward Kinway, which is the famous pirate from Assassin's Creed 4. So I think it would be really cool because I got to tell you, as I've read this book, I absolutely think he's one of the most interesting characters in all of the Assassin's Creed lore. Like, for example, did you know that Haytham Kinway wanted to unite the Templars and the Assassins? Like, if you just played Assassin's Creed 3, there's hints there. But that was actually something he wanted to do. He also has a very tragic story. He watched his father killed. There was a traitor in the mist. He doesn't know who this traitor is. He just knows that as his sister Jenny, who you might remember from Assassin's Creed 4, especially the ending of it, is being kidnapped and she's yelling, "He's a traitor," but you don't know who it is. He's eventually raised as a Templar. And while you will be doing missions for the Templar Order, taking out different people, and I definitely see some awesome stuff in this game, like for one where you have to rescue this Keymaker's son, I just think, man, there's so much strategy in there. Taking out assassins, kind of stalking the place. I think you could have a lot of fun with it. It would be an Assassin's Creed game very similar to Assassin's Creed 1, where you would go to different sections, and maybe that town where the mission is, you're first going to be doing a lot of things to kind of build up to the assassination, right? You're going to be learning about this person. You're going to be learning their habits, their styles. I think that would be really cool till you take out that target for the assassins, and maybe that'll give you a little bit of information of where your sister's at, because that's going to be your driving goal. Ultimately, I got to tell you, the more I have read about this, the more interested I am in this character. I'd love to play some of the scenes that you do in this. And I just think, I don't know, I think it would be a perfect smaller game to allow Ubisoft to bring back a beloved character that people just like in general from his appearances in Assassin's Creed and also his appearances in Assassin's Creed Rogue. So to me, I think this is a no-brainer and an easy, easy sell for a smaller Assassin's Creed game. Now, let me just say, I have read Assassin's Creed Forsaken. I've also read Assassin's Creed Unity. And I got to be honest with you guys, if you haven't read that book, it is fantastic. I thought it was going to be an adaptation. That's why I was so interested, because I loved Assassin's Creed Unity's story when I replayed it last summer. So my mind was like, cool, I want to see those inner dialogue, that inner thoughts of Arno. But this is actually told through Elise's story. And you get to see what it was like for her. You see a little bit of actually Unity's story play into it, but it is so much more in-depth. You get to see just what her family went through. And I'm going to tell you something, if you're a reader and if you're a fan of Assassin's Creed, I highly recommend reading that. Also, another couple books that I would like to read is the Death Stranding books. I love Death Stranding, but I read through a little bit of the Death Stranding Part 2. They break the game's story up into two different books. I read a little bit just to try it out. I think the writing is fantastic. I was instantly drawn into the way they describe the world and Sam Porter Bridges' feelings. Oh man, I was like, dude, I want to read this. And finally, the last book that I want to read that I'm going to recommend based on reading the first chapter is the Guardians of the Galaxy tie-in novelization for the game. It's set right before it, and basically, it seems like Peter Quill kind of screws up the mission and they don't get paid. And I don't know what happens after that, but the writing is fantastic. I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. It was my favorite game that I played last year. And one of the things was the different way the characters reacted with each other. And just in the first chapter, I could already tell that same energy was here. So gamers, what have I been playing on the graveyard shift? Well, I'm going to start with the game that I spent the least amount of time in, and that is my replay of Assassin's Creed 4. This time, I'm playing on the Switch. And I got to say, I finally got the Jackdaw, which is your ship in the game. I've been able to do some exploring. I've been able to do some ship battles. You know, the pirating stuff of Assassin's Creed, which I always found to be the best part of this game. However, let me also say that some of the main stories I've done, I've enjoyed a lot more than I remember. Like, I remember kind of being annoyed with the main story of Assassin's Creed 4. I didn't like all the tailing missions. I didn't like the story. I didn't like Edward. And all of this on the replay, I've enjoyed a lot more. Now, the tailing missions, I have done one. We'll have to see how many you do in the game. But ultimately, I've enjoyed my replay more than I enjoyed when I first played this game. So, only done a couple missions, but definitely enjoyed it. But what about the two games that I talked about last week? What about Resident Evil 4? Well, this is one that I really was going, man, I didn't really do it. Until I was talking to Hulking Yoda over at Lost at Sea Gaming, a great gaming podcast right here on Spotify, about this. And I was like, I've only done this. And the more I thought about what I had done, I was going, wow, I've actually done a decent amount. So I started off this week in that lake area. You know, you get to a point where you're still trying to find Ashley, the president's daughter, and you get to a boat finally. Man, I gotta say, I loved this area. Now, first off, you're gonna fight a boss fight. It's kind of hinted at when you first kind of get into that area. But man, oh man, that lake monster. Oh, I'll be honest with you, me and Hulk and Yoda kind of laughed about this. I did not remember that the way you fight this monster is throwing spears at it. I went into this area. I made sure I was loaded up on weapons. I was good to go. I was ready. And then you're throwing spears. Don't get me wrong, though. I enjoy that. And I'm gonna give you a little hint. When you're out there and you're fighting it, when you get the chance, throw spears at the barrels. Because while you can later on run around and just hit them with your boat, when you're actually in the boss fight, you get a lot more money for smashing those things. So instead of getting like 200 to 400 per barrel, you actually get a couple of thousand. Like I noticed that. I'll be honest though, I only got like one or two. It was very tough to hit them, but just something to be on the lookout for. But that boss fight though, I enjoyed it. I had so much fun with it. One of my fears in real life is water and sharks and the sea creatures. So anytime there's a sea monster you're fighting, it always puts me on edge, and it definitely did here. And ultimately, that lake area, I just enjoyed. Because once you take that lake monster out and you kind of get up and you get to through the next area, you realize at that point now you're free to kind of explore the entire lake. And oh my word, there was so much to go through, so many places I could go back to because now I had a certain key or I had a different item that allowed me to get a little further. Oh my word, I was enjoying it. Tracking down the different treasures, finding the clockwork Castellanos, all of those different things, just a ton of fun. I'll also tell you, the Red Nine pistol is in the middle of the lake. You'll see like a little shipwreck. You want to go explore there. But I enjoyed that. Finally, once I'd got all the treasures I could get, I got all the things I felt I could do, then I started moving forward and I knew what was coming. And that was a fight with a giant. I don't know if he's a troll. I don't know. I just know that there's paperwork that talks about his growth and how he's been eating so many cattle, which ties into paperwork you find earlier in the game about how, the castle has been demanding more and more cows from the villagers. And going into that boss fight, you knew it was going to happen. I don't remember a lot of Resident Evil 4 during my first playthrough. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. That was 17, 18 years ago at this point, whenever it was that I played it. And I just have flashes. But I knew as soon as you get to that part in the quarry of the giant door that's barred and you hear the banging, dude, that giant is back there. So going into that area, again, I was locked and loaded. And I'm pretty proud of this because I got through that boss fight with my rifle, with my good companion dog that was helping me out because I saved him early in the game, and my shotgun. And you know what? I never once actually picked up any supplies. What's funny is I didn't do that because I didn't see it. I was so focused on that giant and taking him down that when he was finally dead, I started looking around and I was like, holy smokes, this place is loaded with supplies. So it was good. I got to restock ammo, but just a little tip, man. Don't get so focused on that giant that you don't notice because they do. They have plenty of healing items out there. There's plenty of ammo, plenty of money. So keep your eye out for that as well. After that, you know, I really just kind of made my way through. You kind of get to the church, and at that point, you're really just kind of taking out villagers as you try to get Ashley to the landing zone. And I'm not gonna lie, at this part in the game, it can get a little bit tough. I don't feel like it's overbearing or it's cheap tough. It's a good challenge because you're really dealing with crowd control and, hey, Ashley, you're gonna be up on me, or do I need you to be back up? What weapon to use? So a ton of fun with that, but be on the lookout because there is a side quest called A Savage Mutt, and it's basically taking down one of those wild, crazy wolves type deal, you know, that are already infected with the disease in the game. And I'm gonna be honest with you, that was a really cool one, man. If there's just that level of creepiness going on, so when you have to go to where it tells you to go, and then you come out of this house and you see the dog and it's just barking at you and it runs off, like you just know, man, you're on for a fight when you get there. So definitely be on the lookout for that. It's got a great reward. You get a lot of tokens for it, so definitely worth doing that as well. Now I finally got to the final part in the game that I've done so far, and that is where you get into the shootout in the cabin, you're with Louise, and basically you kind of hide Ashley, and like all the villagers start coming through. And I'm gonna be honest with you, that part was tough. There were so many you gotta do. You gotta keep control of how much ammo you're using, what ammo you're doing. There's a lot of supplies, so you can, you know, keep your healing going. There's different ammo, there's different gunpowder to build. But just be aware that when the guy with the pig mask comes in, right? That's the best way I can explain it. And you're fighting him, make sure before you kill him you pick up any of the items around, because once you kill him, you might have a couple of seconds, and then you're going to cut a cutscene, and that's going to end it. Unfortunately, I looked back on the map. It was kind of blocked. I couldn't get back to that area, and I missed a gem and some money from that area. So nothing too big. I'd been pretty good about picking up everything I saw, so just a little tip for you. And then finally, I have been playing some more WWE 2K23, and I got to say, I'm pretty happy because I completed the showcase mode, and unlike 2K22 and 2K20, and even probably 2K19, even though I did enjoy 19 to a point, showcase mode this year, I have absolutely loved. I don't know if it's because you're playing as different perspectives, so you're not playing the same matches as the same character over and over again. I don't know if it's the way John Cena talks about the matches before you go into them. Either way, it's been a lot of fun. Even if they did have more objectives than I would have liked, I still enjoyed the matches. I never felt like any match was dumb or just annoying. Sure, I had my annoyances, but at the end of the day, like, it's one of those things where the good of the mode outweighs some of the badder stuff that you have to deal with. So for me, it was awesome. I love the ending of it, guys. And I'm going to get a little to a spoiler territory here. You'll get to a point that John Cena basically says, okay, now you pick my greatest opponent and see if you can beat me. And you're going to go out there, and it's not going to go the way you wanted it to. Trust me. Then you get to do it again, and there's a really cool surprise with the John Cena you fight on the second match. And then finally, you kind of get this Legends match. I thought it was really cool, really well done. So showcase mode for me this year gets a definitely 2 thumbs up. I also was able to try out my factions mode. I'll be honest, I don't think my factions mode is for me. It seemed like it's just a bunch of towers, like daily challenges of trying to hit your signature in less than a minute and then going and fighting so many people in a row. Again, it reminds me of my towers from 2K19. I probably will mess around with it a little bit. I've seen that there's different character models for, you know, the different wrestlers that you play as, but I just don't know. There's just something about that mode that just hasn't clicked with me. But finally today, I started my GM, and I gotta say, I haven't really played anything with it. I just kind of picked my GM, which I picked Kurt Angle, and then I picked Smack as my show to play on. And really, it was about kind of maintaining my draft, making sure I picked the right people. Because the last thing I wanted to do was what I did in 2K22, and that was barely win it. And the key to GM that I have noticed is picking the right people to fight each other. Like, just because you have John Cena and Roman Reigns, if they're both specialists, it's really not going to do anything. You want to make sure you pick people that are bruisers to take on the fighters. That equals a bigger rating match. Doesn't matter the name of it. Yeah, the popularity will factor into it, but the biggest thing is it's the different classes fighting each other. The cruisers and the giants, those are going to get eyes on your product, not necessarily the name associated with it. So I tried to be smart about that. Of course, I did pick Cody Rhodes. That's my boy right now. And then I just, again, I tried to play it smartly. Now, once I really start playing the mode, I'll have to see how it goes. Did I make the right choice going that way? I don't know. I do plan on picking up some legends. You can't pick everybody in the beginning. You have to kind of play the free market. So guys like Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, they weren't available for me to pick. So I have a little bit of money left over. I'm going to try to invest that wisely on the next couple of shows and see how it goes. But of course, I will keep you along for that journey. So gamers, I'd love to know what your thoughts on this episode were. Do you like the idea I have for books being turned into games and the different styles of gameplay I have for those games? I'd also like to know your thoughts on, have you read any books based on video games that you think people should check out? And finally, what are your thoughts on Resident Evil 4 and WWE 2K23? Let me know. TheGraveyardGamer@gmail.com, TheGraveyardGamer on Instagram, or TheGraveyardG on Twitter. Till next time, I'll be creeping around the graveyard.